Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is only fair to warn you that this Tuesday evening broadcast, this late Tuesday afternoon broadcast, this early Tuesday morning broadcast, this sometime on Wednesday or Thursday or God knows a couple of months from now broadcast, depending on when you podcast, is brought to you in part thanks to, oh, it's a warm summer's evening. It's a hot summer's evening in the hills and hollers of West by God, Virginia. And far in the back of the refrigerator, I found an unopened jug of spicy hot V8 that was so cold it had turned to spicy hot V8 slush. And you know me, I'm a tomato freak. And I'm loving it. And I got a little fire going on. So just be forewarned. I'm hot. Spicy. Yeah. No, really, I love spicy hot V8. God, if only I could get him to pay me to say that. I could quit doing the pitches around here. Because unlike that other tomato beverage that I love, Plomato, for which I take unmitigated hell from Ben Birch, do you know where they get that tomato, that clam juice, Bob? Yes, I know, Ben. And it's not pretty, but it's tasty. But the dadgum Plomato's got high fructose corn syrup in it, whereas, please, God, don't let it say high fructose corn syrup, tomato juice, concentrate, water, tomato paste, reconstituted vegetable juice, blend water and concentrated juice, and carrots with it. Nope. No high fructose corn syrup in my spicy hot V8. Hot diggity. So I'm all wired up. Last night was a great show. Not because of me, but because of you. Y'all made it a wonderful conversation last night, and I thought it had a very nice flow, and that was confirmed for me by a number of emails, not least among whom was our friend Jude of Women Standing in Seattle. She said the conversation was rich, and I don't think I've ever heard it described that way before, but it was, and so often it is, and so lest I not. Let me start the program by just thanking everyone on an ongoing basis for the richness of that conversation and what you bring to it. Something else before we get the hip waders on and head into that vile nightmare land that is the American political landscape. An email. And it comes from Fancy. Yeah, you heard from Fancy last night. We talked a little this and a little of that. She says, attached is a poem that I like from my friend. I'll leave her friend's name out. But she says, I'm convinced that you and he sprang from a common gene pool. He's one of my best friends, and although he and his spouse live in Hawaii, we keep up. She says, by the way, he also has a full head of thick white hair. And this is in the context of what we were saying last night about knowledge and the attempt to at least understand what we don't understand. And Fancy says, I have a memory of waking up from a dream, a very complex dream, a dream about the universe. I was there, out there, and when I awakened, I knew everything. I didn't know what I knew, but I knew that for a moment I did know everything. Yeah, I must have been about 10 years old when that happened, and I haven't forgotten the feeling. Then I found myself in an office with a fractal process on the screensaver, and that was it. That was my dream. Somehow, that's the answer for everything. And the poem is called The Soundless Bell. And I'm going to share it with you because I just love it. Then, by the way, the author's last name is Kincaid. You know, we did get a... there was just a handful of us that came over one step ahead of the crown. But we made good, at least in terms of progeny. The Soundless Bell. Somewhere inside myself, I am still constantly blaming, berating myself and my parents and God. I was such a wimp that I simply could not bring myself to go to Woodstock, New York. It was a planet, a universe away. My days full of work for a dollar in my white collar, cowed by my status on the ladder to middle management for a boss that disdained long hairs, scaring me away from expression. No exceptions. It has to advance me, or he was against me, and I believed. I grieved for something I did not know, a place I could go, take off my suit, let my hair grow long, sing songs, smoke some righteous dope, and start to hope there was a life where strife had meaning. Something in between drudgery and nirvana. I just want to be free, I told myself, but nobody else. And here I am, and here am I, 40 years since, and still I wince when I hear Santana or Creedence or Jimmy hitting licks out there in the New England sticks with the millions of tons of garbage and countless revelers rebelling, yelling, dancing, and singing naked and staking out changes in their lives like I was not brave enough to do. I created myself a lifetime of colorless hell, missing the peal of that soundless bell I did not hear that year half a lifetime ago when so many went where I feared to go. A cautionary tale, isn't it? And a beautiful capturing of the constant examination and re-examination of our lives. Thank you for that, Fancy. Sharing something like that, poetry that has meaning, snippets of literature, clips of films, things that speak to us. I think there's probably a fractal geometry in and of itself to that, don't you? Meanwhile, I hear from Jim. And Jim writes in with the subject line, Birther Madness. And Jim says, Hi, I'm sick of this topic. Only the stupid are still discussing this nonsense. Although I doubt you will read this. And let's get one thing straight. Emails don't come in that don't get read. I don't know how many emails the Flush or any of the right-wing blatherheads get, and they've probably got somebody who pretends to be them who answers emails. I read mine. I read it at length. I read it until Agnes looks at me and says, Bob, for the love of God, stop reading your email and turn out the lights. I was sitting over in a hospital waiting room today, waiting to have a CT done on my head. And I'm still sitting there because, lo and behold, you know, you have to buy a data plan with your damn phone, and I'm sitting there checking my, reading my email because it comes in 24/7. And I try to keep up. So, Jim, you're wrong. I don't know why you would doubt I would read it, but I do. He says, let's put the birther nonsense to bed. The Constitution stipulates requirements for president. The Supreme Court is responsible for the Constitution, with the exception of amending the Constitution. On January 20th, 2009, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States had the opportunity to approach President-elect Obama and say, Mr. Obama, in my opinion, as the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, you do not meet the requirements for president as set forth in the Constitution of the United States, and walk away, and that would have been the end of it. That didn't happen. Instead, Roberts administered the oath of office, editorial note, albeit poorly, and thereby affirmed that President-elect Obama had met all the constitutionally mandated requirements. Is Obama a citizen? Who cares? The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court says all the constitutional requirements have been met. That ends it. Give your audience a big squishy hug to tell them you love them. But any conversation regarding qualifications after the oath is administered is the territory of the moron. Sorry, nothing personal, but this is a tedious waste of time. Jim, I don't think you got the point. The whole purpose of bringing up that stupidity was in the context of the fact that the right wing is never going to compromise, is never going to go along. The right wing is never going to do anything whatsoever in the way of cooperating or working with us in the attempt to heal this badly wounded nation. Nothing. Nothing. Not a darned thing. I brought up the birther madness that had been discovered by Jesus General over at patriotboy.blogspot.com as an example of that. You are correct, Jim, insofar as there is no point in debating these morons. But by the same token, they stand as stark examples. They stand as stark examples of why, if this country is to be healed, it will happen sooner rather than later, as soon as we realize that we are going to have to do it by ourselves and on our own. That this country is comprised of at least 20% people who actually think the way those morons think. And just a quick little correction. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court does not have the power to which you ascribe him, or which you ascribe to him. The Supreme Court, before it can weigh in on a case, must have, there are rules of justiciability that apply in appellate courts and frankly to trial courts. And it has to do with cases and controversies. No court in this land can simply pick up an issue and say, I've decided to rule on this. If we had that sort of a situation going on, it would be similar to the rule by Mullah that they have in Iran, or other, other tribunally based. The Taliban comes to mind. But the Supreme Court, nor any court, can simply pick up an issue. A case and a controversy has to be brought before the court. Those are the rules that are established, or that were established by the Constitution and subsequently by the early rulings of the Supreme Court, most particularly Marbury versus Madison. So it's not quite as clear-cut as you lay it out. But you're right. You are correct insofar as you note that these assertions as to these allegations, these loopy, loony, the BS-laden arguments about the nativity, if you will, of the President of the United States is meaningless. It is meaningless in its substance, however. It is not meaningless as an exemplar of the manifest hate that abides from bone to skin, from the center to the furthest external surfaces of the right wing. And, you know, it's radio, so I can't give anybody a big squishy hug who isn't in the room here. But, you know, you're all welcome to one. I like them. But along those lines, we have to understand what it is that we have to understand what it is that continues to motivate these freaks. Overnight, someone took a hammer. Someone took a hammer to the headquarters of the Colorado Democratic Party. The vandal allegedly used a hammer to smash 11 windows there in Colorado. I don't know what our good friend... We haven't heard from him in a while. I hope he's okay, our good friend Preston. Party chairwoman Pat Wach attributed the violence to the intensity surrounding the health care debate. In the story as reported by Think Progress, she said, quote, clearly there's been an effort on the other side to stir up hate. I think this is the consequence of it. Damage done was around $11,000. And it is, it's ugly damage. And these little individualized incidents cannot help but be placed within historic context. This overnight attack on the Democratic headquarters in Colorado with its attendant broken glass cannot help but remind me, at least, someone who has a modest exposure to history, cannot help but remind me of another night of broken glass. That's what it's called. The Night of Broken Glass. Took place overnight from the 9th to the 10th of November, 1938. In Germany, they call it Reichsprogrammnacht, or Novemberprogramm. It was aimed, of course, at Jewish people. And glass was broken all over Austria and Nazi Germany. This is an isolated incident that one would be safe to say, perhaps, in Colorado. But the fact of the matter is we tend to look at the southern part of the United States, the Old South, the Confederacy, what have you, as sort of the cradle of this violently hate-filled, intense opposition to anything that will heal this nation. But as any one of our listeners from out west can tell you, when you start getting westward, you start running into some real, genuine hate. We've had emails from our pal Allison in Idaho talking about enraged citizens calling the cops and saying, you know, if she doesn't quit slamming the door and letting that dog bark, I'm going to call the Aryan Nations on her and they'll fix it. No, really. You remember that story if you're a regular listener to the program. We live in dangerous times. I'm not nearly so... And it's one of those things where, you know, where were these idiots in the last 8 years, the ones that are concerned about death panels and death and FEMA camps and all that blithering idiocy that's stirred up by the likes of Alex Jones and the rest of the right wing? Where were they? Where were they when Blackwater was rounding up firearms from legal gun owners in New Orleans in the aftermath of Katrina? Where were they? Hear the crickets? Yeah, I thought so. There's that. The night of broken glass for the Democratic Party headquarters in Colorado. And then there's this. There's the health care town hall that was held in Iowa. Now, the audio is going to be a little bit sketchy for you. Audio sketchy. Probably doesn't work so well. Image-wise. But what we have here is an individual showing up to this town hall hosted by Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, whom I've pretty much despised, as I've said before, since he came into my awareness back in the mid to late 1980s as an apologist for the anti-democratic, anti-constitutional, these guys were real, pro-death squads. Never mind death panels. The Republican Party is a known and frequent sponsor of death squads. And they are not imaginary. Go ask around El Salvador. Ask in Guatemala. Ask in Honduras. Ask in Panama. Ask in Nicaragua about Ronald Reagan and his Republican cronies and the death squads that stalked the night throughout Central America. Those were real. And Chuck Grassley was an apologist for murder and attempted genocide. And I have loathed him from that day to this. So being an apologist for murder and attempted genocide, Charles Grassley is now an apologist. An apologist for a corporatized, broken healthcare system, and he is part of the effort that has whipped up the ignorant, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, drooling on itself right wing into this murderous frenzy to this point, to last night. To last night at a town hall meeting in Iowa, on the heels of other town hall meetings wherein, for instance, a person carried a sign to a town hall meeting with Maryland Senator Ben Cardin, that sign declaring death to Obama, also proclaiming death to Michelle and her two stupid kids. At least two members of Congress have reported receiving threatening faxes bearing the likeness of President Barack Obama and bearing also the phrase, death to all Marxists, foreign and domestic. So yesterday, Senator Grassley holds a town hall meeting and an elderly man walks to the microphone.
I'm Tom Eisenhower, and I served in World War II, and I'm proud to defend the United States.
I served in World War II, and I'm proud of the United States. And, of course, proud of the United States has to get a big ovation. We don't know what he's proud of. He has the right to be proud of the honorable service he gave to this nation, as did so many of that greatest generation. So far, so good. But I fear our friend has forgotten what he was fighting against.
The United States. That's who you should be concerned about today. Because he's acting like a little Hitler.
Granted, there's a lot of echo, and it's just poor video cam audio. But I trust you heard what he said. Obama is acting like a little Hitler. And that's the applause for acting like a little Hitler.
This goodness tells me when I get 80, I just as well die. Well, I'll take the drums and horses and the stuff that would need to go with me.
Did you catch that? Did you catch that? The President of the United States, that's who you should be concerned about because he's acting like a little Hitler. I'd take a gun to Washington if enough of you would go with me. Let that sink in. I would take a gun to Washington if enough of you would go with me. That is an outright call for an armed mob to go and commit murder. Now, believe me, go to thinkprogress.org if you want and see it for yourself, but no one comes and hauls this freak away. And I say freak advisedly because I do reverence his service in the Second World War, when he and so many others beat back the rising tide of worldwide global fascism and crushed it in its birthplaces in Italy and Germany and Imperial Japan. But it has arisen anew in the United States, and it is, as was prophesied, wrapped in a flag and carrying the Bible. And its name is Republican. And its byword is conservatism. And its watchword is family values. And nothing good can come of this. Nothing good. And I remind you that as a liberal person, as a decent human being, these right-wing monsters, including Mr. Eisenhower, Mr. Tom Eisenhower, who have been radicalized deliberately by corporate America, by corporate insurance, by corporate pharma, by corporate health care, by the Becks and the Hannitys and the Savages and the O'Reillys and on and on and on and on ad nauseam ad infinitum, would slit your throat in a second had they but the opportunity. Motive they already have in abundance because they think that you and I are the problem. Simply because we want every American to be able to go to the doctor when they are sick. The Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, their assistant director of communications is a man named Doug Pennington. He responded to this eliminationist hogwash in Iowa by saying, and I quote, Senator Grassley should have heavily criticized that statement. He should have told Mr. Eisenhower that such barely veiled threats against the president are unpatriotic and repugnant to the American way of life. It was a credit to the senator's audience that they booed Mr. Eisenhower. Did they boo? I heard them clapping when he said that Obama is acting like a little Hitler. You heard them clapping. I heard them clapping. Mr. Pennington also added, Senator Grassley also has a responsibility as an elected official to categorically denounce Mr. Eisenhower's statement and the sentiment behind it. We're still waiting for that denunciation. Hear the crickets. Merciless, monstrous bastards. Bent on destruction. Bent on murder. Bent on mayhem. And dedicated to the once and for all elimination and end of what you and I and history has known as this humble experiment in government of the people, by the people, and for the people. So that is where we begin this evening. That is where we begin. Where you take the program is entirely up to you. There's more and similar such along the way as well. I will await your phone calls to 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Once that you've decided on a killing, first you make a stone of your heart. And if you find that your hands are still willing, then you can turn a murder into art. There really isn't any need for bloodshed. Just do it with a little more finesse. If you can slip a tablet into someone's coffee, then it avoids an awful lot of mess. Cause it's murder by numbers. 1, 2, 3. It's as easy to learn as
hard to resist a tune like that when it's in the moment and in the situation and on your hard drive. Classic from the Police, Murder by Numbers. This is The Horn. Welcome aboard if you've never been here before. You will find yourself immersed in conversation, the likes of which you have probably never heard before. And you are welcome to participate. You're welcome to participate in any way you choose. You can email, like I said before. You can call the program. You can also participate in the chat room at headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. And I've had a couple of emails lately from folks who say, you know, can't get in. We'll work on that. We'll work on that. We'll get you in there one way or the other. It's a great little community. It never really fills up. I don't think we can fill it up. It's not fill upable. But a nice little crowd in there this evening, as there are most, as there is most evenings. Let's go on to the phone. The Horn intern, junior grade Ferg, freshly home from football practice, tells me that Juanita is on the line. Hey, Juanita.
Hey. Well, you're talking about a subject that's been on my mind. The town hall meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these people, they're so proud of themselves. And, you know, that are the ones that are taking over the meetings. And our people, all through these last 8 years especially, have been arrested for just saying one thing. And we could go, plenty of us could go and take over a Republican meeting if we were allowed.
Well, and at our physical peril because those right wing monsters would tear us limb from limb.
And see, they're not used to being put down like we have. We are. We're kind of letting it happen, you know, because you think, well, shoot, if I do the least thing, I'll be end up in Guantanamo or someplace or Egypt or someplace, you know. But that's what gets me, and these Republicans that go to these meetings and thought, oh, wow, I had a really good one, you know. Well, yeah, because you're cowtown to what the crowd is, you know what I'm saying. And then I heard the one of the so-called Democrats from Mississippi, he got up at his town hall meeting, you know, the blonde guy, and he said, well, I'm going to let you know first off that I'm not voting for the bill. And, of course, they cheered him. But that's what really gets me is that we're not really allowed to speak our part. Our freedom of speech has been shot down.
No, this is all very Orwellian, and by Orwellian I mean it. I speak specifically to his George Orwell's Animal Farm, in which is the statement, "All pigs are equal. It's just that some pigs are more equal than other pigs."
Yes.
And see, we're all equal, but right wingers' freedom of speech is a little bit freer than our freedom of speech.
Oh yeah. And they still don't realize how they're being used. Now, I listened to a town hall meeting, a Democrat last night, who they had it pretty well organized, and a lot of the people were talking, and as far as inside, you don't know what's going on outside. But actually, some of them actually made a little bit of sense. You know, it wasn't so much of the hate-mongering talk, overt hate-mongering talk. But anyway, then I saw this panel. They were on like about 3 hours last night on C-SPAN and of the different professionals. And even the Republicans, you know, they said something has to be done. I'm not talking about politicians. I'm talking about health workers, doctors, and so forth. Even the one that handled Medicare when Papa Bush was in, she was there. She was very informative, I thought. And another thing, you're talking about the some of the people that work strictly, they're geriatric doctors, and they work strictly, you know, with older people, and they explain some of the reasons why the living will is good and why that not just the will, But to have a conversation with your doctor about what kind of treatments and all, because, you know, like sometimes they say that the patient can be more comfortable and live a lot longer. They had one that was supposed to die in a day, and she lived for like 6 more years, and she lived a good life. A good life. She, you know, she was sick, but she lived a happy life. And I hadn't really thought of it in that way before, that, because I know I've had to make the decision about my mother. I was the only one, and, you know, there was a couple of things I thought, you know, I thought maybe I had really kind of like Huckleberry Finn, you know, when he decided, you know, to tear up the paper or he would get a reward, or he was going to just, out of what he thought was he was going to go to hell if he didn't turn in the slave, and he was going to turn him in. He was just going to stay where he was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, well, then he got to thinking about this man who was his, who had become his friend. And he said, and then he said, well, I guess I'll just go to hell, and tore up the paper. And the people that were talking about it said, you know, he really believed that that's what was going to happen, because he hadn't really been taught in the church, you know, and considering his circumstances, and he'd just known what he'd been told. But he was willing to give up that for the man who was really his great friend, and that he discovered was really a human being. And I think I got off my subject there.
Well, that's okay. This is not linear radio, Juanita. go where the spirit moves you.
But I like that. I like that. You know, that I thought that was really interesting. And I don't know. I'm just. I don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. But I'm just trying to look at that. That there'll be a wall of protection against our president. Around our president. Gosh, it's awful. But I've been asleep half the day, Bob. I'm sorry.
That's...
But anyway, and another thing I wanted to say is they're always talking about how people don't eat right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how can we eat right in this country? The food has been messed up for so long, till it's almost absolutely messed up now for most of other people.
Oh, I got an email here when I was talking about my beloved spicy hot V8. Our pal Marty chimed in and said, "But are you sure that the tomatoes in your V8 aren't of the genetically modified kind?" And the answer is no, I'm not.
Of course not.
You know, that's why Lay's potato chips has these ads running that say. Well, they had an ad scam going in Chicago on the mass transit lines where they did this thing that looked like the ceiling tiles had fallen and you could see the underground side of potatoes, and you know, your potatoes are grown closer than you think. No, they're not. The fact of the matter is the Frito-Lay has no idea whatsoever where their potatoes come from. They come from all over. And, you know, we have no guarantee from Frito-Lay that they're not genetically modified.
Of course not.
They're not. How are we supposed to know they're not Frankenspuds? Because they say so? Have they said so? I don't know, but you're right.
I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
And, like, you know, John Fox is talking about, what is it, Monsanto?
Monsanto, yeah.
Monsanto. The seeds, you know, have been polluted. And this is not caused by man. Man didn't do that.
Well, exactly.
Sure, man did it.
Sure.
In a laboratory.
And, you know, that's the whole reason that hybrid seeds were developed was to be able to make farmers come back and buy seeds, because this business of people being able to save seed from one season to the next and then plant it, well, that wasn't good for humongous agribusiness.
Yeah.
So you come up with seed that won't sprout the next year, and you got to go back and you got to buy more seed, because we got to keep the American farmer under the thumb.
Yeah. And, I mean, George Washington Carver would have never lasted in today's market.
Well, no.
They would have laughed him out. They'd have run him out of town.
Or paid him to quietly go away and be quiet, or killed him, or, yeah, sure.
You know, I mean, he would have said, oh, you know, those people, they don't know anything. I mean, the man was a genius. And he, you know, I don't know. Our country is so disorganized and so illogical, and so we take, if we could take a short step to heaven, you'd be sure there'd be a Republican in the way and say, we can't have that.
Oh, no.
We got to go way around all these mountains and oceans and volcanoes and all that kind
of
stuff. Ride out the hurricanes.
You mentioned food, Juanita. In the course of the discussion with David last night about this monstrous double down sandwich from KFC.
Oh yeah, I saw that on the internet today.
Oh dear God, I've seen it too, and it just
I didn't know what you were talking about, and I saw it. And Kentucky Fried Chicken, of all places.
Apparently, there's more calories in one of these things than the Wendy's triple with everything and cheese. That has 1,700 milligrams of sodium, 960 calories, 26 grams of fat. The Burger King Stacker Quad. These things sound like firearm rounds. 1,770 milligrams of sodium, 1,020 calories, 69 grams of fat. And apparently, this thing has roughly a comparable content of three McDonald's Big Macs put together. That would be 3,060 grams
wow.
of sodium, 1,620 calories, and 87 grams of fat. Lord!
I know. And young girls are maturing by age 8, a lot of them.
Yeah, no, we don't want
to. And what is it doing, you know, to people? But it isn't something just all of a sudden. It's not just all of a sudden people are gaining weight. It's been going on for a while. I've been saying that about food since way back yonder.
Yeah.
And then there's another thing about all the hate talk. You know, now when I watched C-SPAN, the Journal, one day this week, and some man was calling about them being in at the Grand Canyon, and about her leaning over, about that wife leaned over, and that was the biggest you know what I ever saw. Of course, they cut him off. I mean, that's just a nice thing to say. But when it made me think about. When Kennedy was in office, my dad, he used to get the Orlando Sentinel, which Orlando's very conservative. And, of course, back then, all the newspapers, my dad had got that in the Tampa Tribune, and I used to read them. And there was always this hate stuff about Kennedy. And then when he got killed, they couldn't even stand it that they changed the name of Cape Canaveral to Cape Kennedy. It was just pages and pages of letters.
Oh, I'm sure.
And the thing is that Cape Canaveral wasn't even the original name. Oh, some of them had the historical thing. And so there's just so much hate. It's just, we're just seeing more of it. And they're being allowed to display more of it. And I just can't believe all these people that are threatening our president. I always thought that was number one against the law to even speak of it. When did that change?
IOKIYAR. It's okay if you're a Republican.
Yeah. It's getting to be really evident, isn't it? More and more evident. We knew it for a long time. But I don't know. Just something. You just don't know what's going to happen next. And, I mean, these people taking guns, and the thing is, they don't realize that. Liberals have guns, too. Plenty of them.
Yep.
And there's other weapons size guns?
Oh, ball bats, knives. I don't know. There are probably some liberals out there that could do real damage swinging a hookah. But
what's that?
No, never mind.
But, you know, it's just absolutely astounding. And those Republicans like Ike Grassley, and then now you've got Lieberman.
I almost forgot him. I try real hard, you know.
And then they had a town hall meeting that I turned on today with McCain. And I didn't take too long before I turned it back off of it. But he was talking about him and his two sidekicks. I don't think I have to name them.
No.
Going to Yemen and going to the Afghanistan.
I know. I caught some of that. And I can tell you, my friends, that we're going to protect your freedom, and this is still the freest country in the world.
I'm sick of him. I'm sick of that man. I'm sick of all three of them, but especially Lieberman. What a little traitor. And then he says, With Alec Baldwin, you know, they're talking about him moving up to Connecticut. And he said, well, you know, bring it on. I always liked him as an actor and a comedian.
No. When you do that, you got to do it this way. Well, bring it on. Yeah, Senator Droopy.
There was a cartoon when I was a kid, and you hardly ever saw it, but I just loved it when it did. You go to the movies and see these cartoons, and it was Droopy.
Yeah.
Little dog named Droopy.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Bring it on. Yeah.
And him saying, well, I don't think this is the time to do health care now.
There's no reason to deal with the uninsured until after the recession.
Yeah.
I'm afraid we've got to think about putting a lot of that off until the economy is out of recession. There's no reason we have to do it all now.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, he's got health care. And did you catch that moment with McCain this afternoon, Juanita? When the woman called on him to give up his government health care and get down in the trenches and take his Social Security and Medicare like a man?
What did he say?
Not a word. Pretended she hadn't even said it. And the entire room, right-wingers, birthers, deathers, death panelers, whatever, the whole weird lot of them were cheering.
Well, I've heard them ask the Democrats that. And, I think it's time. Oh, I read where Social Security, we're probably not going to get a raise for a couple of years. So cost of living wage. Well, I say let the congressmen not have one either. Of course, they will.
No. Yeah, right. Because, again, back to George Orwell, Juanita, they're a little more equal than we are.
Right. Of course. And that Grassley, isn't he something?
Oh, he would eat and run rabbits. He would if the Republican Party told him to.
But, and another thing, too, I think you've talked about it. I think I may have talked about it on the show. I don't know. But, you know, them saying that actually when they voted for Part D, you know, the prescription part, that they voted in about the doctors being paid to give you consultation about a living will, basically. That's
well,
what it was.
Can we just, Juanita? Can we just back up for a minute because
you raise
a valid point. Does anybody here, and if you are anywhere approaching, I'd say if you're 35 and up, there's a chance you do.
I'm close to that.
Yeah, I know. Just pushing 29. Does anybody here remember Karen Ann Quinlan?
Oh yeah.
From New Jersey, I believe, or was it Missouri?
Alive?
No, I'm not. I don't think so.
I'm not being funny. I don't really know, but it's a long
time. But she laid in a persistent vegetative state because of a hang-up in the courts. She was the Terri Schiavo of her era.
Yeah. I had forgot about that, but I do remember.
And
that.
She is the reason that the people of the United States began to get serious about, and they're referred to variously as living wills or medical powers of attorney, because the nation looked on in shocked horror because the right-wing religion industry hadn't completely gotten its foul talons and claws into the American body politic yet. The American people looked on in just abject horror for a minute, doing that Christian thing of putting ourselves into her shoes, or in this case into her hospital bed, and saying, "Sweet Mother of God, don't ever let that happen to me."
Yeah.
And that really was when we started getting serious about taking a look at what medical science has done in terms of extending life beyond anything that would you or I or anyone of rational mind would recognize as life.
Yeah.
And in this whole thing, it amazes me. Pardon me, I think I'm about to have, you know, like some sort of talk radio Tourette's or something. But it amazes me that the inept, clueless Democratic machine has yet to start beating it, unless I missed it, and I am prone to missing things, has yet to take this whole death panel issue and just beat the living daylights out of the Republican Party with Terri Schiavo and Karen Ann Quinlan. Is that what we want? Is that what those ignorant right-wing SOBs want, Juanita? Is a nation of people laying in persistent vegetative states in hospital beds?
And they do.
And they do, precisely. Yeah. I have video here, all right? I have video here of a transaction, and the video fortunately comes with audio, of a transaction between the former New York Times stenographer Judy Miller and... I'm trying to find, what is this cat's name? He apparently is some sort of liberal, but I don't know who he is because he's on Fox and I never watch it. And Cal Thomas, who has been spewing right-wing garbage since Jesus himself was a baby, all appearing on, I guess, the Hannity's Great American Panel.
Oh my gosh.
And if you'll bear with me for a minute, I want to play this because... having raised this issue of Karen Ann Quinlan,
yeah,
and Terri Schiavo, since the geniuses in the Democratic Party won't do that,
it wouldn't be fair to use that sort of thing against him. We wouldn't want to do that,
you know. I want to play this exchange, and I want you to hear the justification for laying in bed. And anybody who's ever been around a nursing home or an extended care ward of a hospital knows what the horrors are, and they are horrors, as you know, Juanita.
They definitely are.
Decubitus ulcers, otherwise known as bed sores. You know, bed sores sounds, you know, sort of innocuous, but they are decubitus ulcers, and they literally eat through your flesh. Long before flesh-eating bacteria was the thing,
that's true.
These things have been tormenting our elderly and our immobile and our patient, you know, the weakest among us, unable to care for themselves. And apparently the right wing likes them. And that just stymies me. But let's go to this audio from Fox for just a minute.
Okay.
And it's kind of weird to hear something coming out of Fox that sounds like sanity.
yeah.
But it's Cal Thomas we're waiting for, okay?
Yeah. We have this book, Your Life, Your Choices, 52 pages.
This is handy.
You know, that we're bringing to VA hospitals and nursing homes, and we're asking these guys to fill out workshops, you know, and scenarios about whether or not their life would be worth living. That does not faze you.
It's called thinking about the inevitable. And it's really hard to do, but every American should have a living will, and that is not a death panel.
But wait a minute. Of your life, when you're sick and old, that's not the time to have the discussion.
You're right, but if you haven't had it before, you might.
See, that's the thing about Sean Hannity, Juanita. He wants to tell people when they can have a discussion and when they can't.
Oh, sure.
And the human nature is such that we often, you know, if there's any good to be had out of this whole stupid debate, stupid insofar as it's being generated by a bunch of moronic lies by the right wing, if there's anything to be had about that, sane people are actually taking a look at living wills and medical powers of attorney and testamentary devices and the like and saying, you know, I better get one of these done before the right wing starts trying to make them illegal. Because they're good. They are good.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's not the time to be doing it. Well, when do you want them to do it, Sean? You know, what a moron.
Yeah.
Might as well have it done.
Sean's with the government bureaucrat?
Well, the reason we're having this debate
okay,
is
now, wait,
a
wait,
conflict
wait, wait.
Between...
Wait, wait, wait. Okay. This now, I'm sure, Juanita, that you recognize the voice of Cal Thomas.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that everyone else does, but listen to this freak.
But if you haven't had it before, you might as well have it then.
With the government bureaucrat?
Well, the reason we're having this debate is it's a conflict between two views of human life. Thomas Jefferson said that we're endowed by our Creator, but there are people in this administration and in government generally who believe we evolved from slime. Now, if you believe we evolved from slime and that your nearest relative is down at the zoo and that's why you like bananas on your cereal, you're going to have one public policy. But if you believe that you are created in the image and likeness of God, who gets to determine when life begins and ends, then you have a different public policy.
Now, this was...
So, are we clear here, Juanita? Cal Thomas says that Jesus wants us all to lay in beds and get bed sores, unconscious, vegetables, and unable to do anything about our own human destiny. Is that a fair assessment?
Of Jesus?
No, not of Jesus, of Cal Thomas. Cal Thomas says Jesus wants us all to suffer. Fair enough?
Fair enough. I say God wants somebody to take care of us.
Right. Physician, heal thyself and all that stuff. Yeah.
So this was a
now this is a liberal.
About two different kinds of human beings, Sarah Palin and the rest of the humanity. Are you kidding me?
This is Bob Beckel.
Are you kidding me? Wait a second.
I love Governor Palin. What she was
of course
right
you love
this.
Governor Palin. That's something new for all
no,
of us
no, no,
to know.
But wait a minute. For all you can say, she changed this debate. She literally beat back Obama on...
Yeah, we gotta have a 30-second Sarah Palin commercial in the middle of all this.
I thought her name invoked.
Oh, dear Lord.
Facebook with her
something
posted.
Because she's got a lot of time to do it since she quit being governor. Now, if I could get back to the reality here.
You're going
to
attack our children next?
I wouldn't do that.
Well, liberals have.
Well, I'm not here to defend.
Now Juanita, this is just kind of a little clinic on how not to deal with a right winger. Hannity knows he's about to get his rear end handed to him on a platter. Sean, is this yours? And so he starts diverting, trying to avoid this Bob Beckel guy, trying to play rope-a-dope, trying to keep him from the coming across and putting the left hook into his jaw. But I think Beckel's going to keep trying.
Every liberal, am I? Are you going to start? Are you going to start right now? Now, let's just let this go. The fact is that we've been talking about living wills for a long time. They're important. They're important for families. And by the way, the first legislation introduced on this was done by Republicans 10 years ago. So let me just leave it at that. And why don't you just get off this? Let Carl, if I know you two guys, I know you guys never did drugs, but listen to the two of you, it sounds like it was an LSD flashback. Are you kidding me?
I hate to tell you this, Bob, but you know what? They're doing this to our veterans, and this is part of the end-of-life counseling if you read the House bill, Cal.
There's a difference between a living will and a dying will. There's a difference between having something that you want to do in consultation with your family, your clergy, or whatever, and the government telling you when your life ceases to have value according to your ability to pay more taxes.
And he just makes it up, Juanita. There's nothing in there about the government telling you when your life has value.
I know.
They just make it up.
Absolutely, they make it up. They don't. They could care less about telling a lie. It's like I said about Sarah Palin. to my ex right-wing friend. I said, she would never tell the truth when she can always tell a lie. The woman don't have a truth in her. I've never heard her tell a truth.
Never. Never.
And I know that's a sacrilege to some people, but not to me. I mean, the facts are the facts. You know, there's one thing in the Bible that God don't hide anything about his people. I mean, he tells it terrible things and all. And I think, to me, I think that's a good thing because you used to say anything about Bush, and he was like this little tin god, or more than a tin god, you know. Everything he did was, he was such a wonderful Christian man. Well, where? I don't know. Can't prove it by me. And I know I'm not supposed to judge, but still.
No, that's...
Says, you shall know them by the fruit they bear.
Right. And, look, this makes me so crazy because, well, if you saw the camera pan across the John McCain thing earlier today, you saw an audience that was, for the most part, elderly and Medicare patients.
Uh-huh.
And what McCain was trying to do was trying to whip that crowd into what I think is the utmost in un-Americanism, and that is to get the crowd to say, well, we love our Medicare, and don't you touch our Medicare, but don't you let anybody else have what we got.
Uh-huh.
And that level of selfishness is something beyond sickening.
It is, yeah.
So,
I'll tell you something that happened to me a few years ago that, try not to take too long, but I live next door to this girl. Like, out where I live, a lot of girls have children and they're not married, you know. It happens a lot. And she and I became close. And and I, of course, I loved her children, but they were none of them, she was not married. The oldest one was by somebody else, but the others were by her boyfriend, her boyfriend that was in prison. And he was just a real jerk. And, but he, while he was in prison, they got along really good, you know, because they were getting food stamps and this and that and the other. As soon as he'd get out, he'd put her back on drugs and they wouldn't have anything. And, but anyway, while she was there, and of course I couldn't be her friend at the, you know, because I couldn't stand the guy. But anyway, the kids, they all had Medicaid, and she did too, you know, because it's a family. And at that time, I didn't have anything, and I would be really sick, and I was having. Now I could have reported them for him, you know, when he got out of prison and all, I could have reported that. But I didn't want those children to be without health care just because I didn't have it. To me, that's the height of selfishness. And, you know, do you understand what I'm trying to say is that...
I most surely do.
People are so worried about somebody getting something and taking it away from them. Well, and nobody going to take it away from them except the Republicans. And the Democrats will go right along with them and let them do it. Because the Democrats don't have any guts. Most of them.
And you know what? And this is just a little bit of a sidelight, but I generally root for Democrats during elections just because.
Oh, me too.
But there is word out of Nevada that Harry Reid is trailing both of the Republicans who are contending for the primary slot opposite him for the November 2010 general election.
Yeah, we want somebody.
And
to
it would be nice if there was, you know, what happened to Chip Carter? It would be nice if there was someone who could run against Harry and beat him in the Democratic primary. But the nature of the system is such that, you know, he is the incumbent and he will remain the incumbent most likely. But that having been said, I have no problem saying here and now that you will not hear in the coming year a word, a peep out of me saying that I hope Harry Reid gets reelected. Because the only way to get real leadership, and I think I said this last night, the only way to get real leadership in the United States Senate, because the Democrats in the United States Senate will not oust Harry Reid by themselves, the only way to get real leadership in the United States Senate is for the people of Nevada to get rid of Harry Reid.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm so tired. You know, he said that, well, Lieberman was one of the most progressive senators that he knew. And we, you know, how can you respect somebody like that? I get tired of even Obama, you know, saying, well, you know, this guy's good, isn't that? And like Grassley, he's still praising Grassley. Why, I don't know. But and some of you are like her commentators, supposed to be our on our side, and they'll say, well, you know, I really believe that they're really a nice person. They used to say that about Bush. And I remember one of them, somebody called in and said, how can you say that? They're not nice at all. How can you say that? Because they will call us anything. To them, we're the lowest of the low.
Yep.
And they don't mind telling us that either.
And, you know, a minute ago I said, where's Chip Carter? Chip Carter ran against John Ensign the last time John Ensign ran for Senate in Nevada. And yeah, I got a feeling Chip is sitting around saying, you know, all I have to do is not get caught with a hooker or get caught having sex with my best friend's wife. And I got a pretty good shot against John Ensign. So I can understand maybe Chip Carter saying, no, I'll let the Republicans take out Harry Reid. Maybe he's planning on going after Ensign if Ensign doesn't resign. So that's understandable. But I got nothing. What's the difference between Harry Reid and a Republican? I mean, Harry Reid is about as liberal as those allegedly liberal Republican senators, Olympia Snowe and Susan Collins.
Well, he won't insult a Republican. I know that. He's not different.
But you know why it's August the 25th. Summer is quickly waning, Juanita. School will start back tomorrow
yeah.
for Margie and Ferg and Doodle. Summer's over. And the thing that I think I hold most against Harry Reid, granted it has been backburnered for reasons that I don't fully understand, and it shouldn't have been backburnered, but Guy James and I froze our butts off on the 21st day of January 2009 to go to that Progressive Media Summit in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And in response to a question that I asked, Harry Reid looked me in the eye from the podium and said, we will have a card check bill by summer.
Mm-hmm.
He knew it then, and I knew it then, and everybody in that room, I think, knew it then, that he was lying. That because of the likes of Ben Nelson and Blanche Lincoln and David Pryor and various and sundry other mugwump Democrats, there would be no such bill.
Oh, somebody on one of the shows was saying, look how we had treated Ben Nelson. Talking about, I think it wasn't Move On, it was one of the others was running ads about him. And boy, he didn't like it.
Oh no, he didn't like it a bit. But at the
and one of the Republicans was saying, look how the Democrats had treated their own, you know.
But the fact of the matter is, I think you'll probably agree, Juanita. It's when, yeah, politicians the play fast and loose with the facts, and politicians fudge on the facts. But what Harry Reid did on January the 21st, 2009, was an outright lie.
And you say he knew it.
And when you lie,
mm-hmm.
when you bald-faced lie,
Yeah.
You have lost the right to claim to any claim of good repute.
And isn't that worse than lying about having a little affair in the Oval White House?
No, sure. But I would not, I may yell yippee if some Republican beats Harry Reid in November of 2010. It's that simple.
Yeah, I may too, Bob. I would rather have people that are really for we the people. And that's another thing they talk about, don't trust the government. Well, we are supposed to be the government. We the people are supposed to be the government.
We are indeed.
But that's another one.
There you go. Juanita, this has been a wonderful conversation. I'm going to take a little break, and we'll see what other folks have to say.
And good to hear for answering the phone.
Oh, yeah, he was. He's Horn intern junior grade Ferg has left the room. He's a little sore from football practice today, but he wanted to get at least one phone answered.
Well, he got me. I'm glad. And it was good to hear Agnes and her little laughing yesterday.
Oh, we got welcome back Agnes emails. it tickles people to hear from
you. You know,
her.
You got a great family.
I think so. I am blessed. Yeah. I am blessed is what I am, Juanita.
You sure do. And haven't we got a great audience? I mean, is it Cassie? I mean, that was just...
Cassie...
They should have her in the Congress and telling them, don't you have Karl Rove in jail instead of my mother?
Amen. And Cassie put something up on her website. You know, her blog is FrecklesCassie.wordpress.com, political teen tidbits. And it's worth reading. It's one of these stories that is a cause celeb for the right wing right now, and I think I'll probably save it for prayer meeting. But go and have a look at FrecklesCassie.wordpress.com, and look at her latest posting. I think it is. I think folks will find it. Well, impressive for starters.
Well, isn't she wants to be in journalism?
Yeah, that's part of the plan, I do believe. She's also said she plans to be president in 2030 something. So
okay. I couldn't help but think about Helen Thomas for her. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I understand.
And that's a great compliment from me.
Yes, it is.
I love that woman. And she always answers my emails.
Wow.
And you can tell she's read them because a little comment she'll say. And, you know, that means a lot.
Well, there are some real practitioners of real journalism still out there.
Yeah.
Helen Thomas is one of them.
I'm all for her, for Cassie being president. I know she would be great.
Yeah, get that yard sign.
Don't put anything over on her.
No, get that yard sign early, Juanita.
Yeah, right.
Juanita, you take care and have a wonderful night.
You too. Night-night.
All right, bye. From Central Florida and over the neighborly back fence, now there's nobody quite like Juanita. That's Juanita. It's about 20 minutes past the hour, and we will take our top-of-the-hour break 20 minutes late. But hey, you know, we're not married. We're not married to a clock here. So jump in. Join the conversation. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. It all rolls into the same phone system any way you choose. Email to bobkincaid@gmail.com. And let's advance the conversation, the American discussion, the American debate, the American dialogue, as we do every night here on America's listener-supported liberal voice, The Horn. Green News Report on the way from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen.
Your own personal Jesus, someone to hear your prayers, someone who cares personal, Jesus. Someone to hear your prayers, someone who's there. Feeling unknown and you're all alone. Flesh and your own personal Jesus. Someone to hear your prayers, someone who cares. Your own personal Jesus. Someone to hear your prayers, someone who's there. Feeling unknown and you're all alone. Flesh and
thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, August 25, 2009.
Wacky weather. Oceans warm, Taiwan floods, and Greece burns. Plus, John McCain sees the light?
I think the impact of climate change on our national parks is, well, you know, they're going to have to change the name of Glacier National Park because the glaciers are going away.
But then he goes nuclear.
He certainly does. Now safely back in Los Angeles, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Prepare for 6 minutes of green news. This is your Green News Report. Okay, it's great to be home, back from a lovely week of camping. I won't say where, other than it was somewhere up there in Northern California, but I will say that folks out there need to go out and enjoy their state and their national park and forestry system.
Yes, they do.
It's a great system. So get out there and enjoy your socialized national park system. And by the way, we have to thank for that a progressive Republican by the name of Teddy Roosevelt. Don't forget. What do you have for us today, Desi?
Well, the biggest news is that the world's oceans are warmer than ever, warmer than any time since record keeping began 130 years ago. The U.S. National Climate Data Center says that the average global temperature was 1.1 degrees higher, but the actual temperature spike varied by regions. In the Arctic, ocean temperatures were 10 degrees higher than normal in some areas. Scientists say that warmer oceans are speeding up the bleaching of coral reefs worldwide and create stronger, more intense hurricanes.
Are we going to get the message here? I mean, We have been getting data like this, reports like this, about warmer oceans now for not just months,
but years.
Exactly.
Well, I guess we have to hit people over the head with it. We'll keep trying.
I'd love to hit a few people over the head.
Yes, even with ocean temperatures warming, Florida has enjoyed a few years of unusually quiet hurricane seasons after direct hits by 8 hurricanes in 2 years during 2004 and 2005. Now, according to the St. Petersburg Times, Republican Florida Governor Charlie Crist may have something to do with that. He told a group of realtors last week that for the last 2 years he has asked God to protect Florida, but he is careful not to take credit for it. But I would like to think that he might consider expanding his ambitions and pray for an end to global warming for the rest of us.
There's all kinds of things that he could pray for an end to if he's so effective.
Apparently.
Who knew it was Charlie Crist and God keeping Florida safe for a year or two?
The island nation of Taiwan is observing 3 days of mourning after the devastation from a record-breaking typhoon, Typhoon Morakot, 2 weeks ago. 650 people are listed as dead or missing, many from a village that was inundated by a mudslide caused by a record 100 inches of rain in just a few days. Damage is estimated over $2 billion, and the typhoon exposed persistent weaknesses in Taiwan's flood control systems. According to the Taipei Times, a typhoon last year produced a 200-year flood. In other words, rainfall and storm surge so huge it happens once every 200 years. And yet, just 1 year later, officials label the flooding from Morakot at 250-year flood levels. So
the,
maybe
the 201-year flood, I suppose.
Yeah, apparently they need to adjust their flood scales. Meanwhile, firefighters in Greece are finally gaining the upper hand against wildfires that were raging within miles of downtown Athens. 100 forest fires were reported to have broken out across the country in less than 24 hours last weekend, threatening many ancient sites. Summer wildfires have become much more common in Greece, triggered by high temperatures and persistent drought. 80 people died in Greece's worst ever fire season back in 2007, but this year, thankfully, no serious injuries have been reported. Forestry experts say it could take decades for the areas to recover. As you probably heard, the wildly popular Cash for Clunkers program officially ended yesterday with an estimated 650,000 clunkers exchanged for new, more fuel-efficient cars. And now, home appliance manufacturers are hoping to get a similar boost in sales from a similar program, Cash for Clunky Refrigerators. $300 million of the stimulus recovery package was budgeted to help consumers defray the upfront cost of shifting to energy-efficient appliances with rebates from $50 to $200 starting sometime later this fall. Old refrigerators and dishwashers account for most of homeowners' energy use.
Which all sound like great ideas, unless you're listening to Fox News, and over there, Cash for Clunkers was a huge failure. The government wasn't ready, they can't run it, and therefore they shouldn't run health care and all kinds of other reasons that they applied to this program, which seems to be, by all accounts, at least by the people, we the people, a wildly successful program.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
In our opening, we heard former presidential candidate and Republican Senator John McCain speaking to George Stephanopoulos on ABC's This Week on Sunday.
Yeah, he seems to be seeing the light about,
global
warming. His solution, however, is somewhat questionable.
I believe that the only way we're going to truly reduce greenhouse gas emissions effectively is through nuclear power. We have got to build 100 nuclear power plants in the next 20 years.
Oh, boy.
Well, it makes for a good soundbite on TV, but one nuclear power plant costs $6 to $10 billion and 10 years to build and requires massive taxpayer subsidies and loan guarantees from the federal government. Constructing plants themselves is hugely energy and emissions intensive because of the amount of concrete required, and while nuclear power generates electricity without emissions, the plants require billions of gallons of water to keep their reactors cool, competing with other water users in areas plagued by drought. Plus, reactors have had to be shut down in recent summer heat waves in the United States when river water became too hot to cool the reactors.
So if I got the math right then, to build 100 nuclear plants over the next 20 years, we're talking about anywhere from 600
billion to a trillion.
And the quote-unquote conservative John McCain is in favor of that? I don't think so. Read about that and much more at our blog, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95? Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
second half of the program, really, if you want to get right down to it, but still, close enough for government work, right? About 29 minutes before the hour. Here in about 30 minutes, we'll play the Hour 3 intro and just sort of square things up. In the meantime, however, a little bit of news that I didn't get to last night that I promised, and I hate it when I tease stories that I don't subsequently do. Sort of makes me feel like I've cheated a little bit. Let's a little bit of a coal update, if you will, please, if you don't mind. First of all, good news. Very good news. And it seems an appropriate time to do this, what with having just run Brad and Desi's wonderful Green News Report. I just love the work they do. I wish they could figure out some way to do it 5 days a week. Wow, wouldn't that just be wonderful? But for now, we'll take what we can get and be happy to have it, especially because it doesn't cost us anything. That's really the cherry on top of the whipped cream, because the reports themselves are extremely high quality and it can always be counted on. No, good news, good news. This will be especially good news to our friends in South Carolina. I know that this came as good news to our friend David in South Carolina. This is from the Charleston Regional Business Journal. The story came out yesterday and made it around to the email lists that I follow. There's been a victory in South Carolina for the people who live there and for the people who live downwind and downstream of them. A victory for children in South Carolina. A victory for future children in South Carolina. And now, see, there I am, a liberal, and there I am worrying about the unborn. See, we actually do. As liberals, we walk the walk and we talk the talk, and we want the children who actually live on the planet to have a decent planet to live on. But, you know, instead of worrying about snowflake babies. Santee Cooper is a power company, a state-owned utility. What? What? In South Carolina, there's a state-owned utility? Jesus Christ, socialism! But yes, they've got socialized electricity in South Carolina. What's the world coming to? It's got to end. It's got to end. Can't have this socialism. Okay, we can turn the irony light off now. Santee Cooper is a state-owned utility in South Carolina, and the board of Santee Cooper has voted to suspend any plans that the utility has to build a $1.25 billion coal plant hard by the banks of the great P.D. River. Now, for those of you who don't know, the P.D. River in South Carolina is a historic stream and a gorgeous place. Unless, of course, you drop a big old nasty, filthy, ash-generating, mountaintop removal, coal-burning power plant on it. The Business Journal, Molly Parker reporting, says that the vote effectively puts an end to the power plant that the executives for Santee Cooper said was necessary to power industrial growth and keep the lights on across the state. Coal keeps lights on. But the interesting thing is that the 57.8% of the power in the country, coal isn't keeping the lights on anymore. It's on the way out. It's a buggy whip. Coal-fired power is buggy whip power. But this is really, really good news. Lonnie Carter, of course. Lonnie Carter is CEO of the state-owned utility Santee Cooper. And he said electricity demands have slackened as a result of the economic downturn. Sales by Santee Cooper down 5% from last year. Now, they've made this decision to not build this power plant, and yet at the same time, Lana Cotta has persistently argued that Santee Cooper would be short of electricity by 2013 without the new plant. Somebody might have been lying. He said, Lonnie Carter said, in particular, the recession's impact on our industrial customers has been significant. In addition, we anticipate that as the economy recovers from this economic downturn, long-term power needs will be lower. And, of course, the officials of Santee Cooper also got in a dig, blaming cap-and-trade legislation. It's going to significantly increase the operating costs of coal-fired plants. But never mind the fact that what's really driving it is the largest customer of Santee Cooper, Central Electric Power Cooperative, has said that they're going to back off and cut their power load from Santee Cooper. Central Electric plans to cut approximately 1,000 megawatts beginning in 2013. Central Electric is a cooperative that buys, get this, buys wholesale from Santee Cooper and then distributes it to the state's 20 other electric cooperatives. Apparently some of that power is going to be replaced by Duke Energy, which is going forward in North Carolina with a filthy, filthy, disgusting, revolting, pollution, toxin-generating coal-fired power plant. But the fact of the matter is there's a victory in South Carolina. And that victory is one that we can all celebrate. Because, you see, the wind does blow and the sun does shine. And when the sun's not shining, the wind is frequently blowing. And when the wind's not blowing, the sun is frequently shining. The only thing standing between us and getting rid of filthy coal-fired power is a matter of national will. If we had a Marshall Plan for energy in this country, we could get rid of coal-fired electricity almost as quickly as we desired. We don't have it yet, though. Well, because... Let's remember that we don't have it yet because. Somebody remind me if I don't get back to this, because this whole stream of consciousness thing that happens here sometimes gets in the way. But another piece of inspiring news, and this one being carried at least online, and I presume it will show up in the dead tree version of the New York Times, a story from the Associated Press about something that took place here in West Virginia earlier today. Building on tactics that were used in the Great Northwest, something happened today that is inspiring. Two people climbed 80 feet into the trees on the edge of a vile mountaintop removal operation run by Massey Energy. They climbed into the treetops and set up platforms there near the edge of the Ed White mine site in Raleigh County. Like I said, about 80 feet over the ground and about 30 feet from the mountaintop removal quarry complex. Within about 300 feet of the blasting area. And sat down on their platforms in the trees and said, "We ain't leaving." They said they're going to stay in the trees, Nick Stocks and Laura Stapleton did. They're going to stay in the trees until Massey Energy, an out-of-state corporation, stops the blasting. Because the blasting that takes place above one of those little communities situated in what we call here in Appalachia a holler. and fly rock and dust and aerosolized poisons fill the air below that Ed White mine. The blasting takes place about 4 p.m., just as people are preparing to sit down to their evening meals. But that's of little concern to Massey Energy. Massey Coal Energy, my butt. They don't care whose lives they disrupt. They don't care whose homes they damage and destroy. Because Massey CEO Don Blankenship, as we have noted before on this program, has not yet learned that they don't hook U-Hauls to hearses. And he doesn't think he's quite rich enough yet. So as far as I know, Nick Stocks and Laura Stapleton are still in the trees. They unfurled two banners, one calling on Massey to stop the assault on the communities at the foot of their mountaintop removal quarry operation. It's coal quarrying. That's a phrase that comes out of a DEP biologist report. Another piece of good news. Man, you want to talk about guts? Let's hold up. His name is Doug Wood, and he is a biologist for the West Virginia DEP, and he wrote a memo. You remember when Agnes, the kids, and I went to Washington, D.C. to witness the historic hearing on S-696, the Appalachian Restoration Act? You remember that whole story. Now, if you don't, it's a ways back in the archives. You'll find it. But we sat there and watched the hearing, and the first person to speak was, I believe, West Virginia DEP head Randy Huffman, who sat there and looked a couple of senators, Ben Cardin and Lamar Alexander, in the eye and said, "Now, I didn't come here to praise mountaintop removal, but..." And after the "but," he did nothing but praise mountaintop removal, talked about how its impact was being mitigated and it really didn't do any harm to West Virginia and you know, didn't have any overall lasting effects. And in other words, lied like a rug. Well, this biologist report got loose out of the DEP. And in an act of heroism, the biologist stated unequivocally that virtually everything, with the exception of "my name is Randy Huffman," that came from Randy Huffman's mouth was untrue. Get a little warm down at WVDEP headquarters. That yes, mountaintop removal has a profound impact. No, it is not localized. It will take centuries, if not millennia, to correct. It is pure toxic poison, the mortality for things that it touches, including, yes, mayflies, because the right wing and the supporters of coal are largely a bunch of right wing creeps anyway, especially mountaintop removal. That's why I don't understand why Barack Obama keeps playing footsie with them, but that's another conversation, because Barack Obama is playing footsie with all kinds of right-wingers, and I just damned well don't understand. But they laugh. "Oh, look, see, them damned environmentalists, they think more of a mayfly than they do of a human being. We got to have jobs. How are we going to afford our wives' tanning beds? You know how much them new bulbs cost?" And when I don't, and you know what, Marvelline, when she don't have new bulbs in the tanning bed, she's got them stripes up and down her body. And I tell you what, she ain't a fun person to be around when she's part striped and part pink. Part of her tan and the other part. No, we got to have the new bulbs. And if I ain't blowing up mountains and destroying people's lives and homes and communities, I can't afford them new bulbs. My new tanning bed, Marvelline's new tanning bed bulbs is a hell of a lot more important than any damn mayfly, don't you think?
Really. Two activists were arrested, Louisiana resident Kim Ellis and, pointedly, Zoe Beavers. Zoe Beavers is from Hurricane, West Virginia. Zoe Beavers is an Army veteran. In a press release, she said, I served in the military, quote, so that we can all live in a country that does not exploit and destroy its land and people. The superintendent of the Massey Mountaintop Removal Coal Quarry Complex, and coal quarry complex is a phrase that was developed, put out there by this WVDEP biologist, Mr. Wood. The superintendent of the coal quarry complex was on the site as well. State police... the state police sergeant, M.A. Smith, said that the superintendent knows what's going on, and he's not going to do anything to endanger those kids. I would submit to you that he's probably there because he knows that the eliminationist rhetoric is being ramped up within the Massey community, and he's there to try to keep any of... his people from trying to shoot folks out of the trees because they are that violent and they are that murderous. But this story has made the New York Times. And this heroic act, and it is heroic. A, the idea of climbing 80 feet into a tree... pretty spooky in my by my lights, all by itself. But that's because I'm a guy who's firmly rooted in the earth. But to do so and make a target of yourself for the right-wing thugs that are mountaintop removers, wow. Talk about guts. And Zoe Beavers, who has seen things that most of us would not dare to dream of, and has come home to see even worse brought to her beloved native state. So this evening, say a little word of thanks to whomever you say a word of thanks to, for the folks in the trees at Petrie Bottom, West Virginia. Lord knows they deserve it. Now, what was it I wanted you to remind me of? Because this stream of consciousness thing... I know. Continuing. Remember that part and parcel of all of it. Well, is this argument, well, we can continue to burn coal. It'll be just fine. All we got to do is figure out a way to store the carbon. That's why we're going to pour $60 billion into carbon capture and storage. And you know what? We're going to do it because, see, they's already researching, and I love this. I've heard this. They's already researching it and succeeding with it in Norway and Germany. Really? Are they? Norway? Germany? They're also succeeding with wind and solar in Norway and Germany. We can't have none of that. Yeah, right. But they've touted this business that they're doing CCS, carbon capture, carbon sequestration, as a success in Norway and Germany. There's only one problem. They are, once again, everybody, one, two, three, lying! What they're referring to is a Sleipner project in Norway and the Schwarze Pumpe project in Germany. These were touted as the future of carbon capture and storage. thanks for playing. Here's your lovely parting gift. In Norway, it turns out that the lovely parting gift of the Sleipner Project is a leaking Sleipner Project. The Sleipner Project pumped 1 million metric tons of carbon dioxide a year into rocks underneath the floor of the North Sea since 1996. And they said, and it will stay there forever, you know, you betcha, by golly. Sorry, I'm not making fun of Norwegians. I'm making fun of coal executives who can lie at the drop of a hat. It's going to stay right there, don't you know? Oops. That's right, 1 million metric tons of CO2 per year into the rocks underneath the floor of the North Sea for 13 years. So that would be 13 million metric tons of CO2. And it's leaking. Wow, what happens to sea life when that kind of CO2 leaks out? Meanwhile, in Germany, the Schwarze Pumpe Project, I guess that's black pump, okay, it started in September of 2008. That would be 11 months ago. And as the coal thugs around here, otherwise known as coal executives, are fond of saying, it's already proven successful. They got the technology going, and we need to get it going here. Only one problem. They're not sequestering any carbon dioxide. They had planned and told everyone, the Schwarze Pumpe Project, had told everyone that they were going to store any all their CO2 below ground. They were, again, one, two, three, lying! Yeah. Because they are capturing their CO2. But here's the fun part. Let me look in the chat room real quick. Here's the fun part. Yeah, John Fox is in there. John, sit down and strap in. They're capturing their CO2 because this is the part where John starts screaming. They're capturing their CO2, but then they are, no, really, releasing it into the atmosphere. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's the CO2 equivalent of going up a trout stream and doing catch and release. We have captured the CO2. The CO2 has told us everything that we wanted to know from it. We have found the CO2's papers are in order, and we are releasing it into the atmosphere. Yeah. Jesus. Is there anything that the coal industry won't lie about? Is there one cubic microgram of truth in the coal industry? With stuff like this at hand, I'm guessing the answer is no. Now, I'm sure they've pumped millions of euros into this project, the Schwarze Pumpe Project, and you'd love to know what was in the pitch.
We are going to capture the CO2. The CO2 has no power to resist us. And then we will pump the CO2 into the ground. There it will stay in a CO2 concentration. Better not say camp.
And then they didn't. And see, that's the way the $60 billion will work in the current climate bill that's trying to feebly make its way through the United States Senate. There are $60 billion. Anybody want to do the calculations on what that would do in terms of, I don't know, single-payer health care? You know, would that pay for a month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months? I don't know. But those $60 billion would be spent on pie-in-the-sky projects.
Well, what we are going to do is we are going to use unicorn power
because everyone knows that unicorns, being magical animals, are able to breathe CO2 and fart oxygen, so we will have whole teams of unicorns attached to our coal-fired power plants, and they will generate oxygen, which, of course, is good for human life. And it only costs $60 billion. The first $10 billion will be spent on a genetic engineering process to create the unicorns. We already have a goat that looks a little bit like a unicorn. We're only a couple of gene splicings away. 10 billion should be plenty. Absolutely no more than 20 billion. Okay, 30 billion, and we know we can have a whole herd of CO2-absorbing unicorns.
The report that I'm looking at goes back a little bit to July the 18th. It's from the Environmental Research Foundation. And they note that at present there is neither scientific nor political nor international legal agreement on what constitutes a valid and replicable demonstration of success in geologic sequestration. Now, the problem is that because right-wingers and repiglicans are pathological liars, that means that it depends on what the definition of success is. For instance, in the Schwarzpumpe project, we were entirely successful. We captured the carbon dioxide. And it is not proof that we have failed, that we have subsequently released the carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. So, of course, the coal liars here in this country, look at that, they succeeded over there in Germany. They captured all that CO2, and they wrung what, they done all their research. You know how it is with them Germans and that research. If anybody can figure it out, Germans can figure it out, and then they'll tell the Chinese how to do it, and then we got licked. So even knowing what we know, we also know that the coal industry will not admit that carbon capture and storage is a big, stinking, honking, filthy, dirty lie, just like coal is a dirty lie. Have you been to thedirtylie.com lately? You oughta. And by the way, another blog to keep your eye on if you like to follow this kind of stuff, D. Smog blog. I met the author of the D. Smog blog at Netroots Nation. Great guy. Had some wonderful conversations with him. D. Smog blog. It's a dandy source of information. But anyway, no, what I was saying earlier about it's going to be difficult to get anything going in terms of, by the way, the $60 billion, just remember, the $60 billion that's going to carbon capture and storage, and that's just a little teeny, tiny, tiny, itsy, bitsy piece of the general coal welfare package that's inside that bill, which is just, I'm just about to the point saying, you know, that thing's a toxic mess. I mean, I know, the big-time Democrats are saying, and I mean, I heard it in Pittsburgh, we've got to pass. We got to have a bill. We got to have a bill. It's not a perfect bill, but we got to have a bill to go to Copenhagen with. But the problem is, if it's got all of that coal welfare crap in it, it's really not a bill, is it? Or, okay, it's a bill. It's a multi-hundreds of billion dollars bill that's been handed to the American people for us to pay in welfare to the stinking coal companies that are already killing us. Wait a minute, murder for hire. Oh, never mind. Anyway, I've just about given up on that bill, and I absolutely will not advocate on its behalf. But, well, I tell you what, let's get this thing back on track. It's the top of the hour. So maybe maybe it would be appropriate to take a little break and come back and pick up where we left off with the part where I said that there's a problem with all of this. I think it might... That might prove a little better at keeping us sort of flowed on all of this. So we will. We'll take a top-of-the-hour break. Your calls are also welcome. You know how to reach the program. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. But when we come back from the break, the first thing I'm going to do is follow up with a little explanation of, or a little object lesson, if you will, in why it is going to be so hard and it's going to demand so much effort on our part, yours, mine, ours, to fix this broken nation. Another example of how up against it we all really are. This is, of course, America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn where your voice matters most. We'll be back.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
6 past the hour and we are back on track. No, I promised, and the phone lines are open. Just bear with me for a minute if you want to jump in line for this last hour. I know how you guys operate. You wait for the end of the program, and then you fill up all 6 lines, And I go hustling through it, and by the time I get in, then I get busy signals because you don't have any patience with me. But anyway, no, light them up. I'll get to, this is not going to take long. Do you remember, he asked, knowing that you do, you remember when I went to Washington, D.C. for the Good Jobs, Green Jobs conference, last early February? Ooh. Yeah. Torment the English language some more, Bob. Well, it was there that I sat and heard, didn't get to broadcast it for you, but I sat and heard absolutely stirring remarks by a brilliant man who at that point in time was not a part of the Obama administration, a brilliant man by the name of Van Jones. Van Jones has since been elevated within the Obama administration to the position of being in charge of the president's Green Jobs Initiative. I saw him again at Power Shift backstage and sort of pulled him aside for a second and said, listen, please listen, you cannot green America until you green Appalachia. You green Appalachia first, or every green thing you do in the United States is going to have the stain of coal upon it. I mean, I wasn't that forceful or anything, but I did say that. Van Jones is a brilliant man. But not to the right wing. No. Because he is a man of color, and because he actually wants to start healing this wounded, broken nation and its massive sucking chest wound, and because he doesn't want to do it by writing a big check to the right wing and its corporate enablers, well, Glenn Beck has a different, and by Glenn Beck I mean the right wing, because these, understand, Glenn Beck has never had an original thought in his miserable, misbegotten, recovering junkie life. Isn't it interesting that the two leading spokesmen right now for the right wing are both people whose brains have been scrambled by drugs? Now, that liberal who looked at Hannity and said, you know, if I didn't know better, I'd swear you were having an acid flashback, may have been onto something. Seriously. The right-wing opinion machine is led by a pair of people whose brains have been scrambled by drugs, Glenn Beck and Flush Flembaugh. And, of course, the Savage Wiener has, I'm pretty sure, done his fair share, too. You didn't, you know, just hanging out with Allen Ginsberg would be enough to, you'd catch a contact buzz. And Savage was a confidant and a friend of Allen Ginsberg until he turned on him. And that would be Savage turned on Ginsberg. Yeah, that Allen Ginsberg. I've seen I saw the best minds of my generation, angry angel-headed hipsters, yada, yada, yada. Yeah, that one. Anyway, Glenn Beck has never had an original idea in his life. Corporate America gins up these things, and you know that it's ginned up because it is impossible for the same coincidence to repeat itself over and over and over again. And that's the way it is with the right-wing echo chamber and hate machine. It starts at 6 o'clock in the morning. It starts on little local programs. And by the time it goes national with Flush at noon, or even earlier with some of the others, the message is consistent and it is day-long. It's just that by the time it gets to Glenn Beck, as he is talking to his really elderly demographic and scaring them right out of their golden years, you know, just before bed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Eastern time, Glenn has it refined to a level of malevolence that even the most empty-headed right-wing moron can understand. He uses little short words that they can grasp, and he puts up big graphics of cameras looking at his eyeball so that they'll understand, oh, this is the part where we pay attention. And he has set his eyes on Van Jones. Van Jones, who has more brains in his fingernail clippings than Glenn Beck will ever have cumulatively in his entire body. Van Jones, who is in charge of green jobs initiatives for President Obama via the Council on Environmental Quality. Glenn Beck has a new bete noire. Glenn Beck has found an organization to which Jones once belonged that was called Standing Together to Organize a Revolutionary Movement, STORM. And based on that membership, Glenn Beck has declared that Van Jones is a commie.
Self-described communist with ties to a terrorist is working in the White House? A closer look at President Obama's green czar and his shocking past. Glenn Beck is back from vacation. He's going to join us just 4 minutes from now.
Glenn, now what's his job?
Green job czar. He said it best in that piece. He's basically a community organizer inside the framework of our republic. That's what's happening. When Barack Obama said, I am going to promise you fundamental...
What's happening, Glenn? That's what's happening. A community organizer inside the framework of our republic. That's what's happening. Glenn? Now, I don't want to confuse anybody, but the American Revolution was made up of community organizers. The guys who gathered their muskets and ran to Breed's, not Bunker, Breed's Hill in Massachusetts... In 1775, was it? They did that because their community had been organized into a militia who were called Minute Men, who could be ready in a minute because their community had been organized. Yeah, community, but no. In Glenn Beck's weird, twisted little world, that's un-American.
He's basically a community organizer inside the framework of our republic. That's what's happening. When Barack Obama said, I am going to promise you fundamental transformation of our nation, this is what's happening. We are bringing...
When did he promise that? I mean, because it's offered in quotes. I am going to promise you fundamental transformation of our nation. Well, doesn't that mean he hasn't promised it yet? I mean, I'm just looking at verb tenses and stuff here and participles and so forth, and I know that's kind of geeky. I am going to promise you. That means that's the promise that's going to be made somewhere in the future. It has not yet been made, but I'm such a geek.
Formation of our nation. This is what's happening. We are bringing community organizations and community organizers, and we're embedding them inside of the system to build a new framework.
Wow! He's talking about people being embedded in the federal government when it's going to take us generations to root out all the embedded little right-wing, neo-fascistic, neo-conservative graduates of Pat Robertson Law School and Jerry Falwell Law School and Patrick Henry College and all of that crap. It's going to take us years to find all the places that those little crap weasels were embedded into our government. And they're fascists. And they're fascists who want to kill you because you don't believe the way that they do because, you know, You haven't told any, you haven't gone out and told everybody that Jesus Christ is my personal Lord and Savior, and you haven't caught a pass in the end zone and pointed your index finger at the sky, and you haven't sunk a 30-foot putt and said, I want to thank my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for this here claret jug at the British Open. You haven't done all that, and you deserve to die because they're right-wing Christo-fascists, but never mind, he's upset about Van Jones has been embedded in the government. Well, if he's been embedded, well, I mean, obviously he knows where Van Jones is, so he's not embedded too well. Oh, their fifth column, they got, it's a fifth column! No, really. He's gonna say it. And sometimes I regret the existence of things like New York Times versus Sullivan. And Falwell versus Flint. Because it would be nice for Van Jones to be able to sue Glenn Beck all the way to poverty for what he's about to say.
This guy in particular, and he's not the only one, and you'll see more tonight, this guy in particular is an avowed communist. Mm-hmm. Communist. If you look, and tonight we're going to look at Storm and other radical groups like it, these people are revolutionaries, anti-capitalist, and they have millions and millions and millions.
Did you hear that? He's an anti-capitalist. He don't love the capitalist Jesus. Jesus was a capitalist. Remember a long time back when Al Franken did, it was Al Franken, wasn't it, who did Supply Side Jesus? Just showing how different the message of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, how different his message was from those, the message of the people who profess to act in his name. Yeah. The indictment on Van Jones is that he is not sufficiently obsequious to capitalism. Tell me when capitalism... How was capitalism doing a few months ago when we had to bail out Wall Street? How'd that whole capitalism thing work out for General Motors that took profits and took profits and took profits and took profits and plowed them into executive bonuses and executive compensation and plowed them into stock dividends and stock dividends and stock dividends without plowing any of it into the company itself? Yeah, that capitalism. Capitalism that doesn't give a rat's ass whether or not a child has safe drinking water. Capitalism that destroys and is destroying an entire region of the United States itself. That capitalism. But that's Glenn Beck's indictment. He doesn't worship at the Randian Shrine.
They have millions and millions and millions, if not billions of dollars at their disposal.
Let me ask,
what's the acronym STORM mean?
I can't remember.
Yeah, he can't remember. He can't remember because he's got his talking point out, and the talking point is to say that this guy in particular is an avowed communist. Now, what he's having a hissy about is a 2005 profile of Van Jones, in which Mr. Jones described how he went from being a rowdy black nationalist. Well, you know, that's dangerous right there, black nationalist. I mean, you got your acorn out there, and then you got your La Raza and your black nationalists, and yeah, from rowdy black nationalist to social entrepreneur. And Beck asks, why is it that such a committed revolutionary has made it so high into the Obama administration as one of his chief advisors? Revolutionaries? You're upset with revolutionaries now, Glenn? You're sitting where you are because some revolutionaries wrote a little document called the Constitution of the United States that has a way of protecting your filthy right-wing ass. James Rucker is executive director of Color of Change, the organization that Van Jones founded. And he said, Glenn Beck is trying to change the subject. The issue is his baseless fear-mongering. Of course it is. And it's also guilt by association. We started the program by talking about the fact that faxes have been received in congressional offices that bear a likeness of Barack Obama, and underneath it the words, death to all Marxists. We started the program by talking about the fact that old white World War II veterans are marching to the microphone in Iowa saying, I'll take a gun to Washington if enough of you'll come with me. Because at the end of the day, where the right wing is concerned, Barack Obama cannot possibly be an American, and with due apologies regarding the email that I read at the beginning of the program, again, this is exemplary and not substantive discussion of their issue. He's a man of color, and therefore cannot possibly be legitimately president of the United States, because almighty lily white God in the sky would never countenance one of the sons of Ham to lead this nation. And the fact that a black man is in the White House, oh my Lord God, Billy Bob, is proof that just like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson said, God has lifted his veil of protection from this nation. Oh. It is too much to contemplate. But that, and precisely that, is why the effort to fix this broken nation is going to be so damn difficult. What it really boils down to, however, beyond the fact that Glenn Beck is using Van Jones as a stalking horse for his absolute hatred of Barack Obama, is what that organization that I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, Color of Change, has done to Glenn Beck. Because while, as I mentioned, things like New York Times versus Sullivan and the Hustler decision prevent an honorable man like Van Jones from outright suing Glenn Beck for scurrilous attacks such as this, the Constitution does not afford Glenn Beck an unqualified right to profit from his hatred. And in the days and weeks following Glenn Beck's declaration that Barack Obama is a racist, Color of Change did what Color of Change does very well. It mobilized its membership last week. And that membership placed thousands upon thousands of calls to the companies that are still advertising with Glenn Beck. And by week's end, according to a press release from Color of Change, by week's end, three of those remaining companies, namely Clorox, Lowe's, and Sprint, had promised that they would not run any additional ads on the Glenn Beck program. The jury is still out on Red Lobster and Vonage. Vonage? If you live in the service area covered by CityNet, you can get your internet-based phone service from them. And you don't have to do business with an outfit like Vonage that supports right-wing hate. Red Lobster? Do you really want to eat there? Not me. No thanks. I love me some seafood, but no. I'll wait till I get to the beach. I don't need no lobster that's been flown 2,000 or 3,000 miles. No. But that is the bottom line for Glenn Beck. The organization that Van Jones started has hurt Glenn Beck's wallet. And Glenn Beck is trying to push back, and he's doing it the only way he knows how. By calling Van Jones a communist. Communist. Because anybody who attacks attacks Glenn Beck's wallet has got to be some sort of fifth columnist, some sort of embedded commie. Because Glenn Beck knows that Almighty Lily White God wants him to prosper. What a pathetic lot they are. But in the midst of their pathetic nature lies the danger in which we live today. Email in from our pal William. Subject line, how does one capture carbon? Bob, are these people completely insane to think this way? What are they even talking about when they refer to capturing carbon? What? Put a wet dry vac or damp cloth over the stack and dispose of this by tossing it into the ocean or giving it a ride on the next space shuttle launch? Not to leave out all the coal dust they create blowing it out of the mountains. It's the same with auto emissions. What goes in does come out. It hovers and hangs over somewhere. It does not find its way on its own and go back down the oil well pipe and make more crude. William says, oh, I've got it. Everyone's lungs are the filters. I think you do have it. By Jove, I think he's got it. I think you do, William. Meanwhile, and this is a little bit of weirdness sent my way by News Ninja Gene, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in a moment of sublime stupidity has called for the Environmental Protection Agency to hold hearings on whether climate change is man-made. And here's the real knee slapper. In doing so, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce had the gall to say it will be the Scopes Monkey Trial of the 21st century. A memo to the PR department of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. The Scopes Monkey Trial resulted in a verdict against Mr. Scopes. Despite the best efforts of Clarence Darrow, the defendant was convicted by a jury of lily-white men in Tennessee who ignored facts, ignored science, ignored reason, and ignored the law in order to stand with their maker and declare unequivocally that we didn't descend from no monkeys. And because of the fact that we still remember it to this day, in large part made a laugh, it was another nail in the coffin that is the laughing stock of which the South is frequently made. No kidding. The United States Chamber of Commerce wants hearings in which they hope to dummy up the proceedings enough to leave it unclear whether whether humankind is responsible for a climatic disaster. The way the L.A. Times reports it is thus, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, trying to ward off potentially sweeping federal emissions regulations, is pushing the Environmental Protection Agency to hold a rare public hearing on the scientific evidence for man-made climate change. Chamber officials say it would be the Scopes Monkey trial of the 21st century, complete with witnesses, cross-examinations, and a judge who would rule, essentially, on whether humans are warming the planet to dangerous effect. William Kovacs is the Chamber's Senior Vice President for Environment, Technology, and Regulatory Affairs. He said, it would be evolution versus creationism. It would be the science of climate change on trial. In case you're wondering, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce does not believe, and there's that hateful word, believe, that it is possible for human beings to catastrophically affect the climate of the United States. Interestingly, of course, although the verdict was guilty in the Scopes Monkey trial, we all know that it was a BS verdict, and with very few some exceptions, we understand that what was being put on trial was in fact fundamentalism. Brenda Eckwurzel is a climate scientist for Union of Concerned Scientists. And she said that the chamber's call for a trial, quote, brings to mind for me the Salem witch trials, based on myth. In this case, it would be ignoring decades of publicly accessible evidence. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is having kittens with crocheted tails because it is expected that in the very near future, the Environmental Protection Agency will formally declare that the heat-trapping gases, such as CO2, are a danger to human health and are subject to regulation under the Clean Air Act. Now, there's been more than 300,000 comments to that proposal, many of which are along the lines of, God made the planet, and God can warm it as he sees fit. Amen and amen. You know, I don't want to seem like a nattering nabob of negativity, to recall the words of Spiro T. Agnew. But I've just about come to the conclusion that, oh, I hate to even say this, but I've almost come to the conclusion that we need to stay the hell away from Copenhagen and let the sane people and the scientists deal with it, because, like I said earlier, we will be laughed out of the room if we show up in Copenhagen, Denmark, in December, proudly carrying our little ACES bill, our Marky Waxman bill, and saying, looky, we're doing something. Not much, but we're doing something. The roar of derisive laughter coming from the rest of the enlightened world will be a shame and a blight on our national character. And you know what's sad? It's the best we have to hope for. Because anyone who thinks that the failings of the Marky Waxman bill are going to be fixed in the Senate really needs to put down the screw top wine and crawl out from under the bridge and quit hanging out with the boys down there. Whatever Marky Waxman was when it made it out of the House and headed over to the Senate, it will be unrecognizable by the time the Senate and its body consisting largely of political cowards are done with it. Because, you know, the Senate's a much smaller body than the House of Representatives, and that means there's a lot less senators to buy off for the coal industry, the oil industry, the natural gas industry, the hydrocarbon industry, the religion industry that disputes the denies the reality of climate change. There's going to be a lot less. It costs a lot less. And if you look at the numbers, senators are selling themselves pretty cheap these days. A few million here, a few million there, and you get a multi-billion dollar benefit out of it. Hot damn, spend it. Write the check, Charles. And that's what we're going to take to Copenhagen. You know, I'd love to. Well, I don't know, and I'm probably going to get letters from our Scandinavian friends, but I just can't imagine that Copenhagen in Denmark, that Copenhagen in December is a really nifty place to be. Maybe I'm ignorant of the climate over there. Maybe I don't know. But come on, guys. United Nations. Yo. It's December. Couldn't you have set this, I don't know, Crete? Tahiti? Somewhere nice? Warm? I mean, not to be down on Copenhagen or anything, but because, you know, the Danish people and the Danish state have got a lot of good things figured out. But December? I mean, if you want to have it in Copenhagen, then let's have it in June. Listen to me. I think I'm getting old and cranky about winter. I used to love winter. But anyway, I have real misgivings about us going to Copenhagen. Because it's going to be another one of those cases where it will be reminiscent of it, or it will be, it's going to be like we've still got Bush. Because the bill is that bad. And I'm sure if some of the power elite were actually listening, oh, Bob, you're not helping again. Well, come on, guys, give me something I can get excited about. There's hundreds of billions of dollars of corporate welfare for the petroleum and coal and all of those creepy killers. And there's one pissant $1 billion for renewables? Come on! That's just ridiculous. $1 billion? For God's sakes, that's one of those silly ass scenes out of an Austin Powers movie. $1 billion. Dr. Evil. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is calling for a Scopes Monkey trial on climate change to coincide with the Senate's consideration of this incredibly flawed, vastly ineffective piece of dreck that is being hailed as hope for the future. God Almighty. And so there's that. Shifting gears, we got about 20 minutes left in the program. You got something you want to say? You can dial in. This has been, damn, this has been a filibobster. But there are a couple of things that are still driving me nuts. A couple of things that I haven't gotten to. It's probably been covered endlessly by now, and I'm just late to the party. But I'm still just reeling at the story of Chalice McAfee in Idaho. He's a teabagger. If they were going to make a movie of his life, he would have to be played by John Malkovich. Because John Malkovich is so good at that sort of bemused look. And that's what the mugshot looks like. Yeah, there's a mugshot involved. Chalice McAfee charged with felony aggravated assault after he got caught photographing someone's home as part of what he termed a foreclosure investigation. The person whose home was being photographed objected, and Chalice McAfee pulled a gun on him. He is, of course, a member of the Ada County, Idaho Republican Central Committee. Central Committee? That sounds communist. Communist. He's one of 231 voting members of the State Republican Central Committee. Communist. Communist. Central Committee. Central Planning. Centralization. Sounds communist. Communist. He is also a Ron Paul loony. Like I said, a teabagger. He was hired by a contractor for Wells Fargo. The contractor's name, Tony Schumacher. And said, you know, it's just a shame that we can't use a gun for our own protection. That was not the attitude copped, however, by Wells Fargo, which has received billions, of course, in taxpayer bailout money. Wells Fargo said that McAfee's behavior was, and I quote, horrific and absolutely inexcusable. Well, I guess that means the NRA members will all be canceling their Wells Fargo accounts. This is all just hit and miss, I guess. Then there's Virginia Fox. That's Fox with two X's. She's a double X Fox. No. Maybe, I don't know. She reminds me of that great line Rodney Dangerfield uttered in Caddyshack. Oh! You must have been a looker back before electricity. She says that healthcare reform is nothing but a distraction. A distraction. She said,
the Constitution doesn't grant a right to health care, and most of us are living by as much by the Constitution as we can.
Really? You really think that, Virginia? You think folks are out there trying to live by the Constitution? Folks aren't supposed to live by the Constitution, Virginia, honey. The Constitution is something that is a guide for how government acts. And I'm not silly enough to believe, Virginia Fox, that you think that it really is we the people. Notice how Constitution, capitalism, Bible, they're all interchangeable.
Most of us are living as much by the Bible as we can.
You see, she thinks the Bible's in the Constitution, or the Constitution's in the Bible, because she's a right wing nut.
It also doesn't give the federal government the authority to deal with health care. As you may know, the Tenth Amendment, it says that if it isn't mentioned in the Constitution to be done by the federal government, it's left to the states or the people. I think one of the problems we have in this country right now is the fact that the federal government's trying to do too much. We need to leave things to the states and the localities. And unfortunately, we are distracting ourselves from looking after the defense of this nation because we are dealing with issues that should by right be the state and individuals.
How do you begin to take that apart? You know, this is the same loopy woman who said that there are no uninsured people in America. Virginia Fox is also apparently painfully ignorant of Article 1 of the Constitution. It's Article 1 of the Constitution, which Bossman Wayne has pointed out from time to time, mentions the fact that Congress has the power to provide for the general welfare of the United States. I'd say that health care falls under that broad mandate. But don't tell Virginia Fox. She thinks health care is a distraction. A distraction from what? The defense of this nation. Yeah, it's distracting us from murdering more Muslims. Whew. What a creepy, scary woman. But then again, how many of them aren't creepy and scary? But on the heels of that, we have, from off in the wilds of Oklahoma, Senator Tom Coburn. You'll remember that Tom Coburn was rocketed to the United States Senate on allegations that he made that junior high schools in southern Oklahoma are rampant with lesbianism. Rampant. I'm a doctor, Dr. Tom Coburn, and I ought to know. And he hosted a town hall meeting on health care. And he was confronted by the reality of the hate that he purveys in the form of a woman trying to address him about what her husband is dealing with. Rick Sanchez focused on it on CNN. Rick Sanchez has his own issues. But just listen to the woman's question and Coburn's response.
My husband has traumatic brain injury. His health insurance will not cover him to eat and drink. And what I need to know is, are you going to help him? Where he can eat and drink, we left the nursing home, and they told us we're on our own. He left with the feeding tube. I've been working with him, but I'm not a speech pathologist, a professional that takes 6 years for a master's, and I'm trying to get him to eat and drink again. He's been so much to...
Well, I think, first of all, yeah, we'll help. The first thing we'll do is see what we can do individually to help you through our office. But the other thing that's missing in this debate is us as neighbors helping people that need our help. We
God damn you, Tom Coburn. Neighbors? I guess she's supposed to have a neighbor who happens to be what? A speech pathologist? Or a neighbor who's an otolaryngologist? Ear, nose, and throat guy? A neighbor who's one of those who can help her husband. This evil, sad, sorry son of a bitch self-made just blamed the community for the hell that he has helped create.
First thing we'll do is see what we can do individually to help you through our office. But the other thing that's missing in this debate is us as neighbors helping people that need our help.
Man, listen to them Okies clap. You know, I've been reading Bart Kopp for years and years and years, and I don't know how he's managed to stay in Oklahoma. I know he loves it. But these are the people that he refers to when he says he lives in K-Drag, Knuckle Drag, Oklahoma. Listen to him clap at that woman, telling her to sit down and shut up by their applause. Because neighbors need traumatic brain injury? I mean, I try to be a neighbor to my neighbors. But if they come to me and they say, my husband's got traumatic brain injury, Bob, what can you do? I'll say, let me get out to the truck and get her fired up. We got to get him to a doctor. But Bob, there is no doctor. There's no health care coverage. We've been turned out of the nursing home, and Tom Coburn of Oklahoma says, it's your job, Bob! Only neighbors can help. Wow.
The idea that the government is the solution to our problems is a very inaccurate statement.
What? Clap again, Okies. Clap again. So much for all that we the people garbage, huh? The idea that the government is the solution to our problems is inaccurate. We are the government, Senator Coburn. We work every day. We pay our taxes to carry your dead ass and lead you down a road of unbridled luxury and provide you with the best socialized medicine that money can buy and a retirement that would be the envy of anyone on the planet, Senator Coburn. But you know, and you know what? For all of that, government is the solution for you, Senator Coburn. It's just not the solution for a woman who's trying to defend her marriage and her vows and her oath. Till death do us part in sickness and in health, Senator Coburn. Because you and filthy, amoral, God-rotten bastards in the Republican Party are arrayed and allied against that woman, and millions like her who ache for surcease from sorrow and cry out for some level of humanity and human decency from their elected representatives. And your response is, we'll try to help, but government's not the solution. So you have presaged and set up your own failure. Wow. What a job we have before us. What work we have before us. Because with thugs like Tom Coburn in office, the work is going to be so much harder. Because it is hard to hear the cries of an anguished woman trying to look after her beloved over the cheers of a right-wing mob who agree that government is not the solution. Well, if government is not the solution, the question then among people who are rational and reasonable and logical, the question is, what is the solution? If it is not the government that we ourselves make and that we ourselves have the right enshrined in the Constitution, the right to declare what is right and what is wrong and what we shall do one for another. I'm not even bringing the Bible into this one. That's too easy. What is the solution? Well, in Tom Coburn's world, the solution is to provide more corporate welfare for the health insurance industry and to compel people into a market where money they don't have must be spent on insurance coverage that will not serve their needs. And let me just take this moment to issue a broad and clear, damn you, to Joseph Lieberman. Because while Tom Coburn is out there saying, well, government's not the solution, Joe Lieberman is out there saying, as noted earlier in our conversation with Juanita, well, we don't have to take care of it now. We can wait until after the recession is over. Tell that, Senator Lieberman. You isolated bubble living freak, tell that to the woman in that meeting in Oklahoma. Tell her that her beloved's struggle to cling to life and to deal with issues of traumatic brain injury that prevents him from eating and drinking, from swallowing. Tell her that if he can hang on long enough for the recession to end, you might get around to giving a tinker's damn about them. We're waiting. And we will continue to wait for a very long time. Evil bastards. Wow, what a happy show this was. Sorry. But it has come to its merciful end. And if you are annoyed and irritated, cruise on over and let Mike Malloy get it out of your system. I've raised the boil. Let him lance it. Thank you for joining in. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. Thank you for joining in the chat room. Thank you for your emails. Thank you for your continued support for the Horn. It is much needed, and it is persistent, and regretfully so. We stay brokered in the Ten Commandments. But as long as you're there and continue to help, we'll continue to do this. Thanks to the folks who did contribute in the last 24 hours, new contributors, it is much appreciated. I don't call names on the air unless I'm specifically told that I can, because among all things, we cherish privacy, and we cherish people's rights to remain that way unless they say, "Hey, Bob, you can say my name." So let me know if you choose to contribute. Let me know if you don't mind your name being used, and I'll be happy to acknowledge it on the air. But know any way that you slice it that you have our undying thanks. Thanks, too, to the recovering Peter Godbold. More well wishes going his way. Thanks to John Fox, who does so many things to make things work around here. And has, the fact that we continue to be on the air has a lot to do with John Fox and him slowly teaching me what I need to know on the engineering side of this thing. Thanks to the mods in the chat room. Thanks to ELO, Sue. Thanks to the News Ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. and coalriverwind.org. Down there in the Coal River Valley, standing up to multi-billion dollar thugs with no thought for themselves, but much thought for all of us. The hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob.
Okay, talk to South America. I'm ready to grab. Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and discussing with America's only born-and-bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop renewable. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. Well, howdy! Only fair to warn you that this Tuesday evening broadcast, this late Tuesday afternoon broadcast, this early Tuesday morning broadcast, this sometime on Wednesday or Thursday or God knows a couple of months from now broadcast, depending on when you podcast, is brought to you in part thanks to, it's a warm summer's evening, it's a hot summer's evening in the hills and hollers of West By God, Virginia, and far in the back of the refrigerator I found an unopened jug of spicy hot V8 that was so cold it had turned to spicy hot V8 slush. And you know me, I'm a tomato freak. And I'm loving it. And I got a little fire going on. So just be forewarned. I'm hot. Spicy. Yeah. No, really, I love spicy hot VA. God, if only I could get him to pay me to say that. I could quit doing the pitches around here. Because unlike that other tomato beverage that I love, Clamato, for which I take unmitigated hell from Ben Birch. Do you know where they get that tomato, that clam juice, Bob? Yes, I know, Ben. It's not pretty, but it's tasty. But the daggum tomato's got high fructose corn syrup in it, whereas, please God, don't let it say high fructose corn syrup, tomato juice, concentrate, water, tomato paste, reconstituted vegetable juice, plain water, and concentrated juice, and carrot syrup. Nope! No high fructose corn syrup in my spicy hot V8. Hot diggity. So I'm all wired up. Last night was a great show. Not because of me, but because of you. Y'all made it a wonderful conversation last night, and I thought it had a very nice flow, and that was,
listening to The Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Thank you. countless of tons of garbage and countless revelers rebelling, yelling, dancing, and singing naked and staking out changes in their lives like I was not brave enough to do. I created myself a lifetime of colorless hell, missing the peal of that soundless bell I did not hear that year half a lifetime ago when so many went where I feared to go. A cautionary tale, isn't it? And a beautiful capturing of the constant examination and re-examination of our lives. Thank you for that, Fancy. Sharing something like that, poetry that has meaning, snippets of literature, clips of films, things that speak to us. I think there's probably a fractal geometry in and of itself to that, don't you? Meanwhile, I hear from Jim. And Jim writes in with the subject line, Birther Madness. And Jim says, Hi, I'm sick of this topic. Only the stupid are still discussing this nonsense. Although I doubt you will read this. Let's get one thing straight. Emails don't come in that don't get read. I don't know how many emails, flush or any of the right-wing blather...